We've been having a great freedom retreat every afternoon up at Pulchati Ashram, which is about 4 kilometers from here, upriver. And it's on a very beautiful part of the Ganga. And right in front of Pulchati Ashram in the Ganga is a raging rapids. And I was looking at that and realizing that if caught in those raging rapids, the only thing to do is let go. Let go. To try to cling to anything in the midst of the rapids would just cause destruction, maiming, and death. So such is the case with all of us today as human beings. We're all in this raging rapids, and all of us feel this intensely. At no time in all of human existence has it been felt more intensely that we're in the midst of a maelstrom of our own creation. So we all need to let go together. Let go together. The one we've been waiting for to save us is us. Everyone together. So yesterday, you know, we were talking about beyond causality and what it means to be beyond causality and what it really means to have these powers that some of us have and others have heard talked about, like the capacity to communicate liberation, or the capacity to heal, or the capacity to walk through a wall, or whatever it is. How do these come about? How is it that we already have these capacities, but we don't know that we do? The reality of who we are that is entirely beyond causality can only be realized in each point of view. So each point of view that comes up within our omnipresent timeless awareness, each point of view that comes up, we rest as that point of view. The point of view and awareness are inseparable, like water and its wetness. And when we rest as the essence of every point of view, which is awareness, in other words, no point of view, no matter what it is, has any origin independent of awareness. It has no origin independent of awareness. No point of view, no matter what it is, has any kind of substantive nature that can be subjected to proof or pinned down in any way. If we look at anything, no matter what it is, we find that we can't find anything at all there. And we can take any point of view and test it to see if that's the case. For example, we can take the point of view of a personal identity and say, well, where does my personal identity exist in me? I've taken myself to be a personal identity. That point of view is occurring within my awareness, so I'm going to really prove to myself whether or not that personal identity exists. And if we look at our personal identity, no matter where we look within ourselves, we can look at the brain, we can look at the neurology of the body, we can look at the physiology of the body, we can take the body apart, look at the skin, muscles, bones, blood, cells, everything about the body. And no matter where we look, we can't really find the location of a personal identity. It's impossible to do. We can't really say, oh yes, this is where I exist. This is my nature. Nor can we prove that a composite of all those things is a personal identity. If we took our entire body and placed it under an enormous electron microscope, all we'd see are subatomic particles that all look exactly alike. And we could even bring in our own mother and father and we'd say, who is this? And they wouldn't have any idea. They wouldn't be able to say, oh yes, this is Sophie, this is Tony. They wouldn't be able to say that at all. And then we could take all those subatomic particles and throw them in a linear accelerator and smash them all beyond any kind of identity whatsoever, where they're only light and sound, and still we wouldn't find a personal identity. And then we'd have to ask, well, what's aware of this entire spectacle of nothing? What is aware of this entire spectacle? Awareness is the source of every single point of view. It's the only source, origin, and true nature of any point of view. So when a point of view arises, if we attribute that point of view to some kind of cause and effect relationship, there will be no way to have the direct experience of being beyond causality. If we have the point of view of anger come up and we attribute it to someone or something, then we'll have no way whatsoever to taste that which is beyond causality. Because you see, from cause and effect, it's impossible to realize or recognize that which transcends causality. But from that which transcends causality, cause and effect is included. So as we're all in this river together and we all let go of all our points of view and find ourselves beyond causality. But you see, the philosophy and the experience of what I'm talking about are inseparable. If the philosophy is alone, it means nothing. It's just like pointing to the moon. There's the moon, but all you're doing is pointing to the moon. So the philosophy and the experience are inseparable. And the Great Freedom Teaching provides the key points and pivotal instructions so that click, 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 this philosophy is integrated with the reality of one's own experience. And most often people say, well, I don't really even know how it happens. I just keep showing up here and somehow click, 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 I realize more and more of what is being offered here. Not only in the words, but there's a resonance in the words. There's a felt sense that's palpable that I realize to be myself when I'm in this room. When I'm in this room, my mind stream is interrupted. I'm not thinking about the past or the future. I'm not ruminating about my regrets or thinking back on my wonderful experiences and hoping they'll occur again. And I'm not looking to a future hoping for better experiences in the future. All there is the reality of right now, awareness with all points of view included and contained within it. So, you know, this is what it means to be human, what it means to be human and what it means to be totally alive. But say we have a point of view come up, and it's a point of view all human beings have, anger. If that point of view comes up and we immediately start to elaborate it, so we have a point of view here, and it's called anger. And we immediately start to elaborate it with another point of view. Well, first of all, there's the point of view I, who is angry. So I plus anger. So already there are two points of view going. And then the next point of view is that I'm angry because, cause and effect. I'm having this point of view because, well, immediately one is just swimming around in the quicksand, barely holding the head up above the quicksand of point of view and the entire realm of cause and effect. And usually, you know, it just doesn't stop at one elaboration, but it goes on and on and on to a whole story that consumes minutes, days, weeks, months, years, and maybe a whole lifetime. So you see, the only reality of total freedom is to rest naturally, to rest freely, to rest inseparably as that which is the great reality of every point of view. And the great reality of every point of view is that the awareness and the vivid appearance of awareness, in other words, the awareness and the dynamic energy of awareness, are inseparable, like water and its wetness. So sometimes when we've been living from cause and effect and we're so accustomed to habitually thinking about everything in dualistic terms, this seems a little out of reach and range for us. But it's directly within the reach and range of everyone. Everyone, no matter who we are, this is our birthright. Our birthright is entirely beyond causality. Our birthright is not only beyond causality, but our birthright is to have the direct experience and realization of that. It's not something for the elect or special individuals. It's the reality of everyone, the natural state of everyone. There's no one who can say, "I am not aware." And when we rest as the constancy of that awareness, or we don't even have to rest, just come here, keep showing up, and conviction will dawn. And it's not, you know, it's not a mental thing. It just happens spontaneously. It happens in and of itself, just by virtue of your willingness to know who you are. It's as simple as that. Sometimes I liken it to safe cracking. If you've ever cracked a safe yourself or watched a movie or TV show about safe cracking, there's the safe cracker, and sometimes they have a stethoscope and they're listening to the tumblers click, 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 click. And then finally the safe is open. Well, that's the same sort of thing that happens here. Click, 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 there's more of a reality of what I'm talking about. Not just a philosophical understanding, but the recognition and realization of it in all of life until it's permanent 24/7. So yesterday I was talking with some of the people here about the body, the human body being a point of view machine, like a camera. So the body is imbued only with awareness. All of the sense functions of the body, the awareness is primary. None of the sense functions would be evident without awareness. And when we rest as awareness, that becomes more and more obvious. It becomes more and more obvious that the body and point of view, and all the other points of view, that awareness is the constant in them. Awareness is the constant in the perception of a body. Awareness is the constant in all the other perceptions. So when it comes to the camera and its images, it's awareness that is aware of the camera and the images. But you see, if you're making a film, you can never have that perspective of the awareness that is both the camera and its images without the direct experience of it. It can never be known only through a philosophy. It can never only be mentally understood. It must be directly experienced as an ongoing reality in life in order to have that perspective. And right now, you know, we have so much media available to us, so much information. And once in a while, some of this media, books, films, TV shows, whatever, they point at some kind of great reality that's available to us. But we don't have any films that point directly to who we are in a way that we can directly experience it. Most of these things exist only as philosophies. So the Great Freedom Teaching is media that expresses that not only is a philosophy, but introduces one to the fully evident reality of one's true nature in an experiential way. So it's very, very important that more of our media be presented from the experiential perspective of omnipresent awareness rather than all these points of view about everything, including the philosophical point of view of saying, "Oh, there's a great reality." You know, well, we all know there's a great reality. It's inescapable. Every single person on earth knows that that's the case, even if we don't know how to tap into it directly. But as we all come together in this raging river a point of view and let go absolutely and just allow the current of the great river to carry us beyond the whole realm of cause and effect, then we realize our true nature and we come face to face with that about ourselves which can really solve our problems in an immensely powerful way. Not only our individual worries and concerns, but also those of our family, community, and world. Because right now we're at a point where we are struggling as humankind to hold on in this raging river. And we've been trying desperately to come up with all kinds of solutions to problems facing the world. But no matter how much doing gets done in this regard, the problems seem to be getting worse and worse. So it's time to let go. It's time to see what the solutions are that are beyond causality. We've tried everything within cause and effect, and it hasn't led anywhere. So, the power of awakened awareness, this awareness that is the true nature of every single person, it doesn't see any restrictions or limitations of any kind. There has never been a split or division of any kind in awakened awareness. Awakened awareness is entirely beyond causality. So all the limitations that are posed by points of view of cause and effect do not exist beyond causality. And that's the true nature of our own being. It's the true nature of our very own being, that we are not limited to all of these extremes that we may have adopted, all these points of view that we've adopted about ourselves. But we can only know that when we directly experience it. And in the direct experience of it, we see that there's a reality beyond anything we could have imagined. Beyond anything we could have imagined. And I'll give you an example of that from my own experience. When I had this shift from looking at everything from points of view into awakened awareness and being totally beyond causality, I really had no idea what it was. I'd never heard of enlightenment. I'd never had a guru. This was 24 years ago. I was in the U.S. I just knew that, wow, this is amazing. This is what a human being is. Every human being is this. It's so incredible. And then I suddenly had all these realizations that there's nothing to be learned. There's nothing to be learned. All knowledge already is within awakened awareness. All points of view are within awakened awareness, thus all knowledge of all kinds is already within awakened awareness. I don't think I'd ever heard the word omniscience, but you know, this is what omniscience is, that all points of view are included within awakened awareness, and there's perfect understanding of all those points of view, of all the cause and effect relationships in detail, as well as the vast expanse of awakened awareness in which they're contained and in which they're subsumed. And so I thought, oh, you know, this is amazing. Everything is timeless. Everything is timelessly free. No matter what it is, it's a magnificent appearance. It's distinct and clear. There's no doubt that it is this appearance. But at the same time, it's nothing but awareness. It has no independent origin outside of awareness. And this was just so amazing to me. I was totally innocent. Totally innocent with what was occurring. I didn't have any characterizations or labels or anything else. It was just a simple experience of my own humanness as the vast expanse. And so then I became very interested. I thought, wow, this is so natural. I'm sure there have been other human beings throughout time who have written about this. They've experienced this too, and they've written about this. So I started looking at different writings that where people had written about waking up enlightenment. And I learned that it was called waking up and enlightenment and this dramatic shift in perspective. And I started reading things from all different cultures, even though I had no background in this. I could read the most esoteric text with all kinds of words from other languages like Pali or Sanskrit or whatever it was. And the first time I read it, I understood everything in it, no matter how complex it was. And I could give a talk or a discourse on it. I could take the whole text, no matter what it was, and I could reframe it so that all it talked about was awakened awareness. No matter how much point of view it had in it, I could strip it naked and show that the whole truth exists in it. And you see, because this is natural. This is natural. It's not some big thing that's only for me. It's the true nature of everyone. It's the true nature of everyone. But we can only realize this through our own direct experience of ourselves as each point of view. Inseparable. Our awareness and the point of view, inseparable. Like water and its wetness. All these points of view, no matter what they are, we can't cling to them in any way. They're just the dynamic energy of our own awareness. If we wanted to keep them in place, we couldn't, even if we tried. No matter how much we might want to keep the point of view of a personal identity in place, we really can't do that, no matter how hard we try. How often does anyone in this room have the awareness of being a personal identity? We don't. We just don't. Very rarely do we have awareness of being a personal somebody. So to just relax as awareness, to allow awareness to open into the awareness that is the constant in every perception is more natural than anything. It's more natural than anything. And the more we do so, the more we become aware that we've never had a permanent notion of being a personal identity. It's just another point of view occurring in awareness. A personal identity isn't some kind of a storehouse for all the other points of view. It's never been that way. That's only an assumption or a belief system. But all assumptions and belief systems are points of view too. So, you know, what can I say? What to do? What to do? Nothing to do. Just relax. Just totally relax, and this greatly evident reality becomes more and more obvious. It's no big deal. It's just like, you know, you don't have to prove that your toes are on your foot. You don't have to constantly look at your toes and say, oh yes, my toes are on my foot, my toes are on my foot, my toes are on my foot. The toes are on the foot, for most of us anyway. So, you know, awareness is the constant in every single perception. No matter where we look or what we look at, there's nothing to look at. There's nothing to look at. Awareness, 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 awareness. So I'm just saying, get used to it. You know, get used to the reality of what's really the case. And the more that we are accustomed to that reality of what is the case, the more we realize that we're not talking about some kind of personal accomplishment. Oh, I'm awareness. Wow. You know, I'm awareness. I'll put that on my resume. I'm omnipresent awareness. The competitive edge. The more we rest naturally, the more all of our thinking and our speech and the actions of our body, all of our qualities and activities, the focus on this personal identity, an I, me, and mine who's out to get something for itself, it just disappears. What can I say? It disappears. There's nothing to hold on to there. So it just completely disappears. And rather than the thought, speech, and actions being filled with all kinds of things that are about I, me, and mine, they're about what will benefit the whole. What will benefit the whole. The reality, the great reality of awakened awareness is the emanation of benefit. Its nature is entirely beneficial. Just consider it with me for a moment. As every single point of view already is awakened awareness, that means every single point of view, it's the entire basic space of every point of view is beneficial in nature. Each point of view, no matter what it is, has total recall of itself as awareness. Each point of view, no matter what it is. So for a human being, it's up to us to make that choice in every moment, to recognize the reality of each point of view as who we are, and that point of view, no matter what its description, it's inseparable from awareness. It is only as awareness. No point of view has ever existed separate from awareness. There's no point of view that exists elsewhere. So when it comes to the matter of awakening or enlightenment, there's no awakening or enlightenment that's separate or apart from point of view. No awakening or enlightenment whatsoever that's separate or apart from point of view. If we're trying to arrange our points of view into just having all the enlightened points of view and not having any of the unenlightened points of view, well, that's just more point of view. In awakened awareness, everything is equal. Everything is equal in being awareness only. So you see, the only way we can realize this for ourselves is to be awareness. Just allow that awareness to be primary rather than all the descriptions going on all the time. And when we allow that awareness to be primary, more and more we realize that all points of view, no matter what they are an aware basic space, in which everything is equal and even. No matter what descriptions we've given all the points of view, we realize that this basic space is vast and that basic space is what we are, that the basic space of our awareness has never been confined to a body. It's the vast expanse of infinite space. Infinite is the sky, without any boundaries whatsoever, without any limitations. Each point of view, no matter what it is boundless. It has no boundary whatsoever. Each point of view, no matter what it is, it has no limit or center. It has no periphery. All points of view, no matter what they are aware basic space and nothing else. Nothing to hold on to anywhere. Any questions, comments? Anyone like to come up here and maybe over here today? Simon, how about you?
Hi. I'm Simon. Usual format, I guess. So I've been here for a month now doing the Great Freedom teaching, and I've done the three, well, I'm just about to finish the third intensive. And so I've done the 12 inquiries and the two that follow that. And so before I came to the teaching, I guess I would say that I was spiritually seeking probably for 10 years or so in various different forms. And I've been to, you know, a few different teachers, not so many, but I've read a lot of books and a lot of texts and a lot of different spiritual teachings, you know. And I guess I would say that they were helpful, a lot of them were helpful, but in the month that I've been here, I've just, the entire 10 years before that just don't even amount to anything compared to what's happened to me in this last month, you know. It's just out of control, it's really weird. And so I was thinking before, you know, it was like before. Have you ever seen those guys? You know those guys like in the magic shows? I don't know if they're magic shows or whatever, but you know those guys who spin the plates on those big poles and they run around and they spin all the plates like that and they keep them all up? And that was kind of like me with all my points of view before, you know what I mean? Like that's, as long as all the plates were spinning, I was all right and I was going to be myself, you know? So in my whole life I'm doing this, you know, I'm like, and all my plates were up there and I thought I was doing really well and stuff. But I always knew that if I ever stopped doing that, then the plates would fall and they'd smash and it'd be a big mess and I would be a big mess as well. And so I came here to this teaching and then I realized that, hey, you don't have to spin the plates because nothing happens if you stop, you know? Not only do they not fall, but they just kind of disappear and you don't even have to spin anything anymore. So it's really easy, you know, I can really relate to what you guys up the back were saying yesterday about, I think you were saying yesterday about it's difficult to really accept a new teaching when you come, especially when you've read a lot of teachings and stuff like that. And I was exactly the same, you know, a couple of times during this teaching I was like, no, that can't be right because, you know, so-and-so said this and so-and-so said that and you're really struggling with it and everything. But if you just sort of relax and just chill out, it's exactly like Candace says, it all just goes, you know, it's really, really cool. You don't have to do anything, you just sort of rest naturally and you don't even have to do that. So it's really, I've got another analogy for you.
Great, let's hear it.
We all love analogies here in Grapefruit, I've realized. I was thinking as well, with trying to understand everything and like that, it's like you're in this little dark room, right? And you're trying to look out to the outside to see what's outside, you know, to see the understanding. And so you realize there's this tiny little keyhole, you know, those ones that you have in doors so that you can look out and see who's outside in case it's a burglar or something. And so you're looking out through this little keyhole, but it's not only just a keyhole, it's kind of up high, so you have to stand on your tippy toes and it's really uncomfortable, but you're looking out at the world like that, and that's like looking out through point of view, you know. And then one day you realize in another part of the room there's like this big ass window and like a sunbed that you can lie on and sort of look out at the world, you know. And you go, oh my God, I can't believe I've been looking through this. You know, it's just, all you have to do is just go. So that's how I feel.
I'm going to sit in the back of the room now. And you sit up here.
So,
thank you very much. You're fulfilling my dream to make myself obsolete. Yes.
Before we go further, when you said that a point of view is infinite, could you say more about that? Because, of course, my experience of it, or being inside, is not infinite. But, you know, when I'm more calm. And so I know what you say is true, but I'd like to just see it more. Just see, you could say more about it.
Yes, I'd be happy to. All points of view, no matter what they are equal to aware basic space. And aware basic space is infinite as the sky. As long as you have a point of view, would you like to name one of your points of view?
Oh, it's
anger and control. So this is anger and control right here, AC, anger and control. As long as you take this appearance of the anger and control to be the only reality, it will be the only reality. So whatever awareness focuses on, that is what is realized. Everyone here is a great realizer. And whatever that awareness is focused on, that is what is realized. So if the point of view is taken to be only a point of view of anger and control that you are somehow trapped or caught within, that's all that can be realized. And there's no way to philosophize your way out of it. You can have all the greatest understandings of all the greatest teachings that ever were, but there's no way to philosophize yourself out of it, because that's just applying an antidote of a philosophy to point of view. And an antidote is always just another point of view. So it's like trying to slap a tiny Band-Aid on a gaping wound. Nothing is going to happen there. It's just another point of view. However, when this point of view of anger and control comes up, and there's the realization through resting naturally as awareness that, yes, this point of view has a vivid appearance, but its only true nature is awareness, then more and more there's natural rest as every point of view that's most obvious about it, rather than the point of view itself. So it, rather than the natural presence of anger and control being most obvious, the awareness is most obvious. But you see, this can only come about in an uncontrived way. If we're trying to contrive anything to make it happen, then it won't come about. It's very unlikely to come about. Say we like to meditate. Well, if we're meditating with a focus on any particular point of view that we're trying to achieve in meditation, watching the breath, watching the thoughts, watching the emotions, seeing a flickering candle, looking off into space or whatever it is, then we have a point of view we're focusing on. So even if we meditate, we want to be free in the immediate perception of every point of view. We want to just rest as each point of view that comes up. That's true meditative stability, to be totally free as the essence of awakened awareness that is the nature of point of view. See, there's no way to overcome anger and control within anger and control. And there's no way to apply any antidote to anger and control that's another point of view that can possibly do anything about it that's permanent. It will continue to arise. But when we rest naturally as the natural rest of awareness that is the essence of point of view, more and more we realize that all of these points of view are just the dynamic energy of awareness. They're unpredictable. They're countless and ceaseless. And when we rest as awareness, we realize everything there is to know about every single point of view and its relationships, as well as our true nature, which is omnipresent awareness. So rather than just knowing the points of view, we know all. We are the all-encompassing awareness that knows all. It's just like trying to separate out waves from the ocean. It would be impossible to do. We can't do it. The waves are going to keep coming. The waves will just keep coming and coming. They're the dynamic energy of the ocean. And all these waves, they're equal, you know. One wave isn't saying, oh, I wish I could be that wave over there, I'd feel much better about myself, or I'm not high enough, or I don't have enough bubbles in me, or, you know, there's no, all the waves are equal. Or, you know, I wish I were in the Arabian Sea rather than the Pacific Ocean, or, it's all just the dynamic energy of awareness and nothing else. But you see, as long as we're clinging to point of view as some kind of safety device, you know, those little circles that you get inside in order to float around in water, the little flotation devices, as long as we're clinging to any of our points of view in that way, that we need them to prove something about ourselves, we'll never even taste what it's like to rest as awareness. It's impossible. It's totally impossible. All we can do is rest naturally, or just allow it to become more obvious by showing up here. But you know, this, the Great Freedom Teaching is definitely for people who don't want to struggle. Anybody who wants to continue to struggle intellectually and with all kinds of doing, this isn't the place to be, because there's no struggle here. What we already are doesn't require any effort. What we already are requires absolutely no effort. There's nothing to be achieved. We already are what we are. Awakening's the point of view too. So if you say something like, well, I want to be awakened and it's somewhere in the future, then what you're going to constantly be looking for is some kind of destination of awakening, some kind of experience of something that you can then characterize as awakening. But the freedom in immediate perception, timeless freedom, is timeless freedom as all points of view. So, you know, where would you say the destination of an awakening is? It's just like if I look here and then I look over here, would you call one the destination of awakening and the other not? Or this second one a better awakening than the prior one, or a magnification or deepening of it? You see, so it really can't be characterized. For a human being, the closest we can come to characterizing it is awareness. Just simply awareness. Awareness. And even if we lived forever, each moment of that, so to speak, each moment of timeless freedom would be timelessly free as whatever the display is in that moment. So there's really no destination to arrive at. Nor is there anyone to arrive there, as we've already shown. But you see, a personal identity can't possibly relate to a reality beyond itself through a philosophy. But it's impossible that that can be so. But that which is beyond the cage of philosophy incorporates a personal identity. It's the most amazing thing. You know, we're not saying, oh, obliterate a personal identity. No one exists. No one ever existed. We're going to enter into some kind of extreme state of no self, no thought, no concepts. That's nihilism. That isn't freedom. That isn't timeless freedom. So you see, in Buddhism, it's called the complete enjoyment body. That's the five manifest enlightenments are called the complete enjoyment body. So even though, you know, the personal identity has no independent origin or nature, that which has no independent origin or nature completely enjoys itself as omnipresent awareness. Everything is subsumed in that. But you see, that it's not a destination. That's what's occurring right here. Just because we've learned that there's something else occurring doesn't really mean anything. But you know, all fields of knowledge are coming more and more together in what I'm describing here. In science today, the same things going on as I described is going on in some films and TV shows. There's pointing to a great reality. You know, in science today, in theoretical physics, for a while, a few decades, it was the Heisenberg linear principle. Well, everything exists only because there's an observer of it. But now science is saying, in theoretical physics, some scientists are saying, well, there's no observer either. There's no observer either. So this is, you see, all fields of knowledge, no matter what they are, if they're really looked into, their only essence is awareness, no matter what all the descriptions are. So best of all, what we can give ourselves as human beings is this introduction to our true nature. to just allow it to gradually come about, to get familiar with it, to stop analyzing, to stop placing ourselves in extreme situations where we're told we have to do something. We have to continue to struggle to be who we are. If all of these methods and practices of struggle really led to enlightenment, there would be millions of people enlightened. But the only teachings in which hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people have awakened, they're all the same. Rest naturally without seeking anything. Rest naturally, freely, in immediate perception. And you know, this isn't some kind of far-flung reality either that only happens once every 500,000 years. It happens all the time. It's just that, you know, communications between people have been limited until just very recently, so we don't even know what's happening in other cultures. We don't know, for example, that in Tibet, century after century, for 17,000 years, there have been hundreds of thousands of people who not only awakened to freedom from all mental concepts, but freedom from all mental concepts that is coupled with omniscience and complete benefit. So, you know, we don't even know these things. But you see, the reality of what is has always been, and so we need to rely on we need to rely on what has always worked. Why rely on anything else? Why rely on what doesn't work? It's just like, you know, if you want to buy an iPod, you're not going to keep going back to a store that doesn't have an iPod and saying, oh, you know, where's that iPod you promised me? I want my iPod and I want it now. You're just not going to struggle. You're going to go online and order one. It'll be shipped to your door or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Are there any, or what beliefs do you think sort of come close to this teaching?
I've never seen one, just this movie right here.
Well, you've referred to the Matrix a couple times in your teachings, and I'm just wondering if...
Well, The Matrix is another movie that points to something, but it's like dangling a carrot or a gold ring. Have you ever been on one of those merry-go-rounds where you try to grab the gold ring? Except this is really kind of a sadistic merry-go-round, because every time you grab the gold ring, it's jerked out of range. So you see, the Matrix points to something, but in a very fuzzy way. But you know, what we can say about the Matrix is that Neo didn't want to rely on anything anyone else said. He wasn't going to rely on any of the concepts. He always knew something about himself that was beyond everything else going on, no matter how refined or developed it was. You know, even realizing that that this notion of there being the one was actually part of the Matrix. In other words, an anomaly of point of view. So all these methods and practices that never lead to any kind of achievement, or rarely, these are all anomalies of point of view. They're not teachings of timeless freedom, but there are teachings of timeless freedom. And there always have been throughout the history of humankind. And anyone who in their human lifetime shows up in a place where they hear that is just the luckiest of all people. It's really true. It's really true. And, you know, there are many people in this room who can attest to that. Because you see, this that we want above all else, at least probably everyone in this room, or have realized, it's in every single moment, it's so totally magnificent. There's no boredom factor. No boredom factor whatsoever. It's like, oh wow, I'm sick of being awakened awareness. I don't want to do that anymore. You know? That never happens. So... Are there any other questions, or would anyone else like to come up here?
I just feel not have many words. I haven't followed many teachings, even though I've been here a while. But just being hanging out here in this place, there's a part of me that really wants to say thank you, because this teaching is precious to me. It has been precious. And I just want to acknowledge it. I don't want to say much or anything, but just acknowledging it, because just before you say that whoever hears this teaching is very lucky, I felt it before, and I just wanted to acknowledge it.
Oh, thank you, Ali. Thank you. Any other questions or comments? Poems, dances, cartwheels? Carrie?
I'm Carrie, and I'm doing the 12 Inquiries course now. And I'm still in the midst of it all, but this morning I had what felt like a profound experience for me. I turned on BBC, and I was watching the demonstrations in response to the Muslim cartoons, and I was seeing all these images of people burning flags and anger, and I was just suddenly struck with this like huge acknowledgement of point of view in a way that I hadn't felt. And I sort of found like a bunch of humor, like, look at this craziness. And I started laughing, and then I just started crying. And then I saw all of that I was experiencing as point of view, and then I just experienced this extreme possibility that I hadn't really ever felt before. And I felt like, for the first time, really, truly, like, it is possible for us to get beyond this. Mm-hmm. Completely possible and so simple. It's almost crazy making. You know, and I was sort of sitting there going back and forth between elation that it's possible and just like, but it's so crazy point of view. And I don't know, I just wanted to get up and say that I'm believing that it's possible.
So. Thank you. There's no need to split off from anything, because there's nothing to split off from. It's all pure space. So, you know, this great freedom, timeless freedom, isn't a matter of superficiality or denial. That isn't what it is at all. It's laser-like clarity about everything that's occurring. And not only laser-like clarity and intense compassion about everything that's occurring, but also a wisdom response to it. A wisdom response, the response of primordial wisdom, beyond causality to whatever it is that's occurring. So it isn't a suggestion of superficiality or denial or immorality or irresponsibility. It's the ultimate responsibility that can only come from beneficial body, speech, and mind, the beneficial body, speech, and mind of timeless awareness. Naturally present is every single person in this room. And everywhere. All 7 billion, no one left out. No, not right now. I won't do that. However, we can provide you with a summary of the 12 inquiries, and they're also available on our website at greatfreedom.org. We have an excellent website. Mm-hmm.
Sometimes things are gripped below conscious awareness, or I'm not even phrasing that, but sometimes least to the personal identity of the low conscious awareness. Like a pain.
Oh, in
you
other
feel
words.
Like a pain and you're not. Like if you have a pain and it doesn't go.
Mm-hmm. A physical pain? Mm-hmm.
Not just perhaps maybe attention is a better word, but I'm just curious how.
I have a beautiful distinction for you about that. That's so easy. It's so clear. We learn to describe ourselves in very complex ways just by adopting knowledge from other people. So secondhand knowledge. Knowledge that isn't even something we came up with ourselves, points of view we haven't come up with ourselves. So we start to see ourselves in a scientific materialist way, that we're a body, that we have a psychology, that we have an intellect, that we have an unconscious, that we have a consciousness, that we are an I, all of these things. And then we relate all of these things to the central point of view called an I. And all the time we're thinking about this jumble of things, like all the plates spinning that Simon described, and trying to figure out what we are. Who am I? And where do I fit? And how do I arrange all these points of view so that I can feel comfortable, satisfied, and fulfilled in life? But what the Great Freedom Teaching offers is to drop all that description. To completely drop all those descriptions, to realize yourself as awareness only, and all points of view arising in that awareness. Arising, abiding, and freeing themselves simultaneously, with nothing that needing to be done about them, like the flight path of a bird in the sky. They vanish naturally, leaving no trace. So just like awareness of tension, the tension is only a vivid appearance as long as awareness is focused on a point of view called tension. Otherwise, the tension isn't apparent. So even if at the end of the day we say we have some kind of totalizing point of view that says, wow, I've been tense all day, if we really look at it with just very elementary insight, we can see that very seldom during the day did we have the point of view, I'm tense. Even if we had it 20 or 30 times in a day, those are so few compared to all the points of view that arise in one day. So we come to a complete understanding about ourselves when we recognize ourselves in this way, when we see that we are awareness only, inclusive of all our points of view, that all of these points of view are fleeting, They're ephemeral, nebulous, evanescent. They disappear in and of themselves. There's nothing that we need to do about them. We don't need to put them all together into a better set of points of view or excise a bunch of them and put them somewhere else outside of awareness. All points of view, no matter what they are, they're naturally occurring, the naturally occurring dynamic energy of awareness. If we start to try to organize them, then we just spend all of our life organizing points of view. That's all we're doing. But all the while, even in the non-recognition of awareness, there's blatant recognition of awareness. Can never be denied, only to be known through uncontrived relaxation. So when the point of view of tension comes up, know it not only as tension, know its true nature as your own awareness, that it would not be without your awareness. The tension would not be without awareness.
So the tension is a point of view?
Mm-hmm. The constant efforting to hold point of view in place is tension. It is tension. Many people come here and talk about attention. Some people talk about attention or anxiety that is unremitting. It won't go away. It's like a clutching that's actually felt and sensed in the body. But then anyone who stays around here for a while, they all describe that as disappearing. Because there's after being here, there's just no way to hold on anymore to belief in all these points of view. And it just happens naturally. It is our natural state. So it's just like for the first time in our lives, we can be totally at ease. We can be totally relaxed. Maybe for the first time in our lives, we're hearing people speak about what's really true, and maybe we've never heard anyone talk about that before. So it is relaxing. It's very relaxing.
I don't disagree with that at all.
Mm-hmm.
And often this tension will show up, and I have been really relaxed.
Mm-hmm.
More just as a surprise, like waking up in the morning.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, so it's just a point of view that I don't understand. It will go with more relaxation.
Yeah, exactly. It's that simple. Joanna?
Hi, sure.
Sure.
So if I sit here?
Oh, yes.
I used to, when I was about 16, I was smoking some weed with some friends, and this is in Northern California, and I don't smoke weed now, so I don't know how it is in other places, but I know that there it's really strong. And instantly, I got high and felt like everything switched. And I went from being just, you know, in a normal reality to now I was in a really terrifying reality. And everything, time was stopping and going and stopping and going, really fragmented. It wasn't linear and smooth. One situation wasn't continuing into another. It was just, everything was separated. And so there wasn't a context for myself anymore, and there wasn't a follow-up, and I couldn't hold a conversation because I couldn't remember. The words that I had just said seemed like something separate from what I was saying now. So everything was completely separate. And there was also like a hot, muffled feeling. And I was feeling like I was outside of myself and looking at everyone, and I could see all of the insecurities that everyone had and that I had, and all of the pain that everyone had and that I had, and all of the limits and fears and stuff like that. And it was such a unnerving, terrifying thing that I can't remember how it got resolved or what happened, but I did not ever want to smoke weed again. And people just enjoy it so much and make it look like so much fun, so I would you know, do it sometimes, but always I would have the same reaction again. It would be the same exact thing, that it was, that reality was absolutely, without any questions or doubt, terrifying, and it existed. And then I would start to feel same thing, like I would just be having my normal life, and then all of a sudden some flash, or not even a flashback, but that reality would come upon me again, and I would be outside of myself and just see things as totally terrifying. And it would be, I would be having a conversation with my mother and not have, I mean, I haven't smoked in a long time or done anything really, and but it would come up again, that same perception would be there. And it was always really, really, really scary, and always I just felt like, please don't take me, please don't take me, please don't take me, don't, I don't want to slide in there, I really felt like it was, I had to keep it together to not go crazy. And so, I'm in the 12 inquiries now, and it kind of came up the other night, and it's actually been coming up a little bit, where I'll feel like I'm resting naturally, and all of a sudden I'll see, it's happened a lot with you, Candace, where I feel like I didn't see you before I saw you through a lot of the labels or ideas that I had about you, and then all of a sudden I'll realize that I'm seeing you. I don't know how to explain it. And so that was fine, that wasn't frightening, but then it would start to be that all of a sudden I was seeing beyond my points of view, even though that's, I don't know, maybe that's impossible, but I was seeing other points of view, and then they would be scary ones again, where I could see the person's insecurities, and it pretty much always inevitably ended up feeling like I really was uncomfortable with the other person, and I was really uncomfortable with myself. And so I just spoke about it with Ju and started to feel like, on one hand, I trust this teaching and I trust that everything's going to be okay. And on the other hand, I just couldn't not believe that reality didn't exist, because it's so strong and so frightening. And so I feel like when I was speaking about it with Ju, could kind of rest with it and just feel like, well, then I go into it. And if it is just a point of view, then it is just a point of view. And if everything's safe, then somehow it must be safe. But anyway, I'll be afraid of it, whatever. I don't know if it really got resolved or not. I felt like it kind of did. But, and then the next day I was walking by myself and just past a group of people and realized how I felt so uncomfortable with myself. And then later on that day I was walking with Ju, and through, it's kind of just a hangout area, through groups of people again, and realized how now I just felt invincible. And usually when I'm with Ju, I just feel like everything's fine. I don't really mind what happens, because I just feel safe. But then earlier that day, Candace, you had been speaking about love and about how when you're in a relationship and you feel that love isn't, you don't need to blame, so-called, the person for your love. The love that you feel for them is the love that you are and that you are. And so all of a sudden I realized, when I was walking through those people and feeling so invincible, when earlier the same instance had made me feel so uncomfortable, that I was giving due responsibility for all my comfort and invincible feelings, when really I am comfortable and invincible. And if I am, then those that reality can fit in there and not be separate from it. I won't slip into it. It's just part of it. And when I realized that about the love, I just felt all of a sudden like, now I can grow up and move on and be a woman and stop having to either, you know, try and get something from my parents or get something from my lover or hide behind anyone or have anyone there to protect me or have anyone there for stability, or it's okay, it's going to be, I have it.
Thank you, Joanne. Thank you. Thank you. Wow. That's great. There's nothing to be afraid of. But you know, when we only see everything within the framework of point of view, then there are these points of view of a potentially terrifying reality. Mental illness, extreme physical illness, extreme suffering due to war, extreme suffering due to other kinds of violence. There are all of these terrifying things that we feel can grab us and pull us in at any single moment. This is just a reality from living from point of view. Even if we aren't acknowledging it, it's the underlying tone of everything that's going on. So when we start to rest naturally, more and more we realize that all of these terrifying realities, whether they've been really overt in us or not, that they all are points of view, that they really are just points of view arising in awareness, and that timeless awareness, omnipresent awareness, awakened awareness, it can't be affected by anything because everything is itself. Everything is itself.
How do you think this could apply to creating a morally based society? Do you think that, you know, once people have experienced liberation, that there's no one to control and there's no one to be manipulated? And you can't be manipulated. I'm talking in a conventional sense. It's often said that people can torture our bodies but not our mind.
Right.
But there's always those who will come with a point of view against those that perhaps are liberated and will find ways to, manipulate at least their bodies to try and force their view upon others. And how will the society of the liberated respond to the society of the oppressed and those with a single point of view?
We can only know through more and more people becoming liberated in a definitive way. In other words, taking it all the way, not just having some idea about it. In other words, an anomaly of point of view, but really taking it all the way. And first, we have to recognize it in ourselves. So we have to directly experience our own awareness and be absolutely certain we're committed to making it fully evident above all else. And within that, then we realize that we are inherently moral and ethical without any kind of rule book needed. And as we realize that about ourselves, then we have the firsthand experience of it being possible for everyone else. I really understand what you're saying about societies of the liberated or categories of the liberated or cultures of the liberated and oppression by other cultures. Because what has gone on right now is that the only cultures in which this tremendous liberation is occurring, that liberation context is identified with that culture. Tibetan culture, for example. And there are people opposed to it, Tibetan culture, millions of people all over the world opposed to Tibetan culture for one reason or another. So the matter of liberation has to step outside all these territories of liberation, all the costumes of liberation. And that's what the Great Freedom Teaching does. It speaks about liberation in a way any human being can understand, and it has no categorizing mechanism whatsoever other than humanness. That's its basic category. And the Great Freedom Teaching, unlike territories of liberation, is grassroots. Nothing can stop it. You know, nothing can stop it. There are Great Freedom communities sprouting up everywhere all over the world, and it's at the grassroots. So it's not limited to any kind of territory or ritual forms or any kind of bias that can come from social injustice, economic injustice, gender injustice, environmental injustice, or any other kind of injustice. There's nothing that can stop it, and it's equally acceptable to all people, no matter who they are, because it relies only on awareness. Only on awareness. So, you know, all we can do is realize our own awareness and then come together as a global human community. A global human community that is without limitations or boundaries. You know, that doesn't need to see itself as divided by skin color or national boundary or anything else. So we step outside all of the structures that currently exist and say, this is who we are, and we're taking responsibility for it. It has a very, very powerful force. So, you know, if there's someone who is opposed to a culture of liberation, let's say China and Tibet, for example, where the Chinese invaded Tibet. Well, this has been going on, first of all, for thousands of years, that China and Tibet have been going back and forth. For a while, Tibet is Chinese, and for a while, it isn't. And so what occurred most recently is that the Chinese came into Tibet and decided that the superstitious practices of Tibetan Buddhism weren't beneficial to the Tibetan people. So they came in with the idea to benefit Tibet by eradicating superstitious practices from Tibetan culture. And be all that as it may, at the same time within Tibetan Buddhism is the pinnacle teaching of all Buddhism, Dzogchen. But because all of Tibetan Buddhism was taken to be something, in other words, superstitious and not helpful, the jewel was missed. You see, the jewel was missed, the jewel that not only can contribute to Tibet and China, but all of the world. But you see, this jewel of omnipresent awareness is a wish-fulfilling gem. No one can ever steal it or capture it. It's impossible that it be stolen or captured, because it's all that is. It's all that is. So you see, say that omnipresent awareness is a treasure chest or treasury, and all the points of view are jewels. They're all wish-fulfilling jewels. Whatever awareness wishes them to be, they'll be. So you see, the Great Freedom Teaching allows that wisdom to be spoken in a way that any human being can understand. Whether they're Chinese, Tibetan, Indian, American, European, African, South American, Australian, Antarctican. Did I miss any of the continents? So, does that answer your question?
Yeah, it
Yeah. Most important of all is to have the direct experience of who you are, rather than having it as a philosophy, and to nurture and encourage that, the full evidence of that realization in every moment. The Great Freedom Teaching offers the four comforts to participants: the teacher, the teaching, the community, and resting naturally. So for the first time in human history, there's a web of people throughout the world who are living the reality of liberation, and those people are all relying on each other. So it's non-hierarchical. Anyone who needs any kind of support whatsoever in any moment has access to someone else to support them in this matter of living as omnipresent awareness. So this is the first time in history that that's been the case. Even if you're living in Siberia and you can only write letters and it takes weeks to get there, we will get back to you. But for most people, we have a constant response mechanism, so people are responded to within 24 hours at the longest, either by telephone or email. So these are the practical realities of what it means to have a worldwide community living as omnipresent awareness. It has to be taken out of these territories where it's... You know, at one time the territories were very appropriate because it was very difficult for people to travel outside maybe a 25-mile area of where they were born. It was very difficult for people to communicate with each other until very recently, you know, the last 100 years or so. There's been an increasing capacity to travel and to communicate, and so this will keep expanding. But as it does, this worldwide culture of liberation, as you call it, it's effortlessly connected. It's effortlessly connected. There's no one left out, and there's no way to put an end to it. How can you put an end to that which has no beginning or end? So you see. Ollie?
Yeah, these questions in a way brought me to some rememberings of my own experience in living. And being part of a culture of liberation, and that culture of liberation, but it wasn't the Tibetan, it was another group, and they got kind of erased by killing the one who created, originated that culture by the government. So I'm saying, and this is not something new, it's new maybe to that year that happened, but it's an ongoing process where it was Jesus, even Buddha got poisoned. I mean, it seems like that going down to history, that whoever created or became that human awakening, because I listen to your answer and say, yeah, before you become awakened and then you find solution, you don't make questions before about how you're going to survive it. So, but it happened down history that whoever became awakened, most of the time got erased on his physicality, obviously, that awareness still stayed, and it was always here, so the gift has been given anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But still, the practical problem is there. How can this culture of awakening be supported in a place where the main culture, the main society, all over the world is oppressive, no matter what? Because even the Chinese, for the Tibetan, it wasn't because it was superstition, it was the power to conquer Tibet. So it's not about creating democracy in Iraq, it's about oil. So I'm saying all these things are evident. And about awareness, It's more like it's about awareness that it is the greatest terrorist, because when one loses fear, then one is free to do anything, no matter what, because we have no fear about death. But that is the greatest terrorism. So it is a physical danger, that culture of awareness, to be in the world, unless one is smarter, learns from the past, because so many people have been killed down the ages who were awakened.
Well, we'll see, won't we?
Yes.
But, you know, there's in that which has no history, who cares about history? So there's a certain momentum afoot. And we each need to take responsibility for ourselves and living as our own awareness. And then we'll see what happens. But we should never be held back by any idea of history or anything else. We should never be held back by any idea of history, by any idea of what awakening or enlightenment is, by any idea of what's possible. Never, never. I have the direct experience of that, you know, in my own life. There's nothing to hang on to. And no matter how authoritative any point of view, point of reference, or frame of reference might be, within the scope of my own awareness, it has no power whatsoever. No power whatsoever to affect awareness. It only has the power to affect awareness if it's given that power by an individual human being. So, you know, first of all, we have to confront the true terrorists by looking in the mirror. You know, we have to look in the mirror and go, wow, I've been terrorizing myself with all these points of view. That's the only way we can really come to understand the mechanism of all this in its totality. See, when we know it's possible for ourselves, we know it's possible for everyone. And we're not taking up these diametrically opposed positions, this one against that one, bad against good, positive versus negative, this country versus that country, right versus wrong. We realize a whole spectrum of communication that was never known before. So now we have so many means at our disposal to communicate this, and now it's up to us. We'll sit quietly for a few moments.